Good morning. I'd like to welcome all the visitors. That includes people from Murfreesboro, though we really don't think of you as much as being visitors. Normally, when we think about the Feast of Trumpets, we think about the last trump, which is the one we're all looking forward to. It's when Jesus Christ returns, and he mentions it many times. There are other meanings to the Feast of Trumpets besides just those things. And there are seven trumps in the book of Revelation. The seventh trump, Jesus returns, the dead in Christ will rise first, and we who are alive will rise to meet them in the air. And we all think of that, and we realize how wonderful that is going to be. But there are some other meanings for the trumpets. Does anybody want to be bold and suggest another meaning for a trumpet? Any thoughts? Sound of alarm. Absolutely. Sound of alarm. It's a warning to the whole world, in a sense. And if you look at Isaiah 58 and verse 1, Isaiah 58 and verse 1, you'll see that the preaching of the gospel is a warning to the world. Here it says in Isaiah 58 and verse 1, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet." So this occurs before that period. Really, in a sense, leading up to the Great Tribulation. But even during the Great Tribulation, there will be two witnesses in Jerusalem. And they will lift up their voices like a trumpet. But we're lifting up our voices like a trumpet now in preaching the gospel, in putting out a warning to the world and an opportunity for blessing for people to come out of this world and be a part of the kingdom of God when Jesus Christ returns. It says, "Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Tell my people their transgression." I'm impressed at how the Good News Magazine and the telecast are as bold as they are. I mean, they come out extremely boldly in speaking. Now, not every telecast, but some of them are very bold. They tell about the Sabbath. They tell about the holy days. They are strong about the sins of this world, about defending God's plan of marriage, which is not very strongly done anymore, is it? People just live together, and nobody thinks anything of it. Well, I shouldn't say nobody, but a lot don't think anything of it. I mean, you have very popular people like Oprah Winfrey, who has said she's basically against marriage and doesn't want to marry. Why should you do that? Although she may change her mind, some people have who were against it. One lady, I can't think of her name right now, was on The Voice or The View, and she said, I've been married, and I've lived in sin, and I like sin better. And can't remember her name right now. But since then, she's changed and decided she got married. So it's, and people think nothing of that. But those are transgressions. And it says, "Tell my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins." And then it says, "Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways." People talk about God and what God is doing. as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinance of justice. They take delight in approaching God. There are lots of people who go to church, but they really don't pay much attention. And I sent a note. We're in a co-op. It's a milk co-op. And everybody takes turns. Right now there are six in the co-op, six families. And we take turns. So every sixth week, one of us will drive down past Columbia and go to an Amish home. And he has raw milk. And then the person comes back and we all meet in Spring Hill and get our milk. So I sent a note to them telling them that I would be gone, Krishna and I would be gone the second half of September. And I mentioned that we were keeping a church festival, but then I went a little further. I said, it's the Feast of Tabernacles in John 7. Now, it's interesting that people, you can tell them you're keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, they look at you strangely. These are people who go to church, read their Bible, and you can say, Feast of Tabernacles, and they'll look confused, like, what's that? Well, it's in the Bible. And Jesus kept it in John 7. So, and I mentioned that to people. It's the same feast that Jesus kept in John 7. They'll look even more confused. But I did mention that we'll be gone. I call it a church festival. It's really God's festival. But then I added to it by saying, Jesus kept it in John chapter 7. And so that way they know it's really God's festival. But these people, they study their Bibles. Basically, everybody who is in our co-op is a strong churchgoer. And I doubt they know about it. They go to church, but do they really obey the Bible? To keep the seventh day, which the Bible teaches, seems strange to them. And so there is going to be preaching of the gospel besides the two witnesses. It's being done now. The Sabbath is being taught. The holy days are being taught. And let me just say, I appreciate being in United Church of God. Now, I know that at the feast, we will have people attending with us who are not members of United Church of God, but will be there because of family, because of convenience, location, and one of the things that I will do, for those of you who go to Panama City Beach, I'm sorry, I'm going to be there, and you get to hear me again, pretty much the same stuff you hear me rattle off week after week, but I'm going to welcome them all and say, you know, the Church of God is not a corporation. It's those people who have God's Holy Spirit. And the United Church of God does not teach that the corporation, United Church of God, is the one true church. There is one true church. It consists of everyone who has God's Holy Spirit. And they may be attending in a different organization. But one thing I greatly appreciate about United, and one other group that I'll even mention, is Living Church of God. And that is, both groups are very, very adamant about preaching the gospel to the world. To the world. Not just by internet, but by advertisements, putting booklets out in Africa, handing out flyers in Africa, in Nigeria, in Ghana, these little trifold flyers. Now, you're a part of that. The other group that really, in my mind, is very, very strong about and doing a good job. Now, there are others who are trying, but the two that are doing the best job really, in my mind, are united in living. And I appreciate the work that they're doing. I appreciate the work that Living is doing. Dr. Meredith, to his credit, is very, very, very driven to preach the gospel to the world. And I would disagree with him on some things, the government that he has chosen. But as far as his desire to preach the gospel, he truly has it. They have a fine magazine, which Lucretia and I take. And Dr. Meredith told Denny Luker, of course, Denny's not alive anymore, but he told Denny Luker, he said, we take the Good News magazine. He says he has a subscription, and he said the leaders in their church take our Good News magazine. And he asked us for more copies of the booklet on the Trinity that came out. So we look on them as being a sister organization, and they're preaching the gospel. But you know something? The money that we give makes all of us a part of preaching the gospel, doesn't it? That is the offering that we have and the tithes that we have. They're not doing this all by themselves. It is not just the three presenters. There are people behind the camera. There are people who are doing the dubbing. There are people who are doing the editing. But you know, how do they do that? They have an income. And they are preaching the gospel with the help of all of us who give offerings, who give tithes. And I want to turn also to Ezekiel 33, verses 1 through 9. This is part of the trumpet. It's an alarm. Part of the alarm is telling about the tribulation to come. Telling about the resurrected Roman Empire. The beast with the woman who rides the beast. That's all a part of preaching the gospel. Those are in the booklets that we send out. But here in Ezekiel 33, let me get over to it, starting in verse 1. Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon a land, and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people. They did not have radar, you know. They had people who would stand up on the parapets. They would even build towers out away from the cities. And they would have smaller fortresses further out away, like away from Jerusalem. And they'd have men who would sit there or stand there all day long. And then at night, there would be three or four shifts. Sometimes they had three watches, sometimes four. But they would watch, and they would listen at night. And if an army were trying to sneak up to Jerusalem, they would blow the trumpet, and then further down, the trumpet would be heard by others, and they would blow the trumpet. So if one watchman blew the trumpet, the others who didn't see the army yet would blow the trumpet. Now what he says is, if the children of your people are going to have a sword brought on them, and they make a man their watchman. When he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet, now this was actually a shofar, a ram's horn. It wasn't a pretty trumpet like we're thinking of, a brass or a silver trumpet. It was a ram's horn, so it was sort of a blat. Whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood shall be upon himself, but he who takes warning will save his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity. But his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So the watchman is required to watch and to blow the trumpet, to warn. And if he doesn't do it, then he will have the blood of everyone who is taken away on his head. So it isn't just the sinner, it's those who didn't warn the sinner. Verse 7, he's not really talking about physical watchmen looking for a regular army. He says, "So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel." Well, that's an interesting thing to say. Where was Ezekiel? Where was he living? Anyone remember? Where did Ezekiel live when God gave him these prophecies? Babylon. He wasn't in Jerusalem. He wasn't even in the house of Judah. The house of Israel had gone into captivity to the Assyrians over 100 years earlier. Now here was Ezekiel, a captive slave in Babylon. And he is told, "You're a watchman to the house of Israel," a people who had already gone into captivity. Does that make any sense? Actually, it does. And it's because God caused Ezekiel to write down these words of warning, and God preserved them for the house of Israel. And so Ezekiel is warning the house of Israel by writing down all of his warning in the book of Ezekiel. And the house of Israel has received the message of Ezekiel, although they don't understand it, they're not really listening. And actually, how many churches of this world are preaching the warning, the warnings that God gives through Ezekiel? There are some. There are some. Many groups are preaching financial blessing. Some churches preach peace and contentment, which is good. I agree with peace and contentment. But how many of them are preaching Ezekiel and the prophecies in the Bible that are of warning? And that's something you and I are a part of. We have a part of doing that. Just like Ezekiel, "So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me." And the three presenters are warning Israel, and those who write in the Good News magazine are a warning for Israel. And I'll say the same for those who are writing and preaching and living. And there are other groups who are trying to do it, but they are hindered. We could all do a lot better job. A friend of mine, and I've mentioned his name, is Davy Crockett. And he's in Living Church of God. And he was their business manager for many years. And he's retired now. But he was a business manager in Charlotte. He was a businessman, did very well financially in Little Rock. So we knew him very well. I was pastor there 9 years while he was there. And he said, what bothers him terribly, this is when he was business manager, what bothered him terribly was to see how we are duplicating effort. He said, if we were combined, how much more could we do? But we have two presidents, two boards, two business managers, two telecasts, two magazines, writers for both magazines, instead of all putting it into one, duplicating efforts in Africa, duplicating efforts in South America, duplicating efforts in India. So it bothered Davy that we weren't all together. But we are doing our best with what we can do. And you know, it isn't just the writers or the business managers. It's everybody who is praying about it. And some don't have a lot to donate, but maybe a little bit, who are donating, who have the preaching of the gospel in their hearts. Just as Jesus came and he said, I did not come with my own message, but the Father sent me and told me what I should speak and what I should say. And he said, the words are not mine. And then he told them that they were to take that same message. And he said, to all the world. And you think to yourself, wow, he's asking those people back then, the apostles and those who were with them, to take the gospel to the whole world. And they made an effort, but they didn't reach everybody. And we're making an effort, but we know we're not going to reach everybody. And Jesus said we wouldn't even cover all the cities of Israel before he would come. But we are to make that effort. Mr. Armstrong was correct, in my mind, when he would say that a person's conversion is measured by how earnestly they put their heart in God's work. Now that work is not just preaching the gospel, it's also feeding the flock. But we are all a part of that. And he says, I've made you a watchman for the house of Israel. That's not just for Ezekiel. That's for those who take Ezekiel's message. Therefore, you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die. And you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way. That wicked man shall die in his iniquity. But his blood I will require at your hand. Ezekiel did his part. He wrote it down. And it was preserved. But this is not just speaking to Ezekiel. This is speaking to those who have picked up Ezekiel's mantle, who have taken his staff and his message. And he says, verse 9, Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity. But you have delivered your soul. So we have a responsibility to tell everyone we can. Now, we can each in our own lives, by setting our own example, preach the gospel. The fact that there are people that who know that you're here on a day that is a strange, on a Thursday, the Presbyterian Church knows that we're here on a Thursday, the co-op knows that I'm keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. Sometimes our example can preach the gospel. But you have delivered your soul. And to not be ashamed of what we do, of what God gives us to do, of His feast. Verse 30 through 33, still in Ezekiel 33, verses 30 through 33. As for you, son of man, the children of your people are talking about you beside the walls and in the doors of the houses, and they speak to one another, everyone saying to his brother, please come and hear what the word is that comes from the Lord. Maybe some people say that about the telecast. Not just our telecast, but other telecasts that are going out. Please come and hear what the word is that comes from the Lord. So they come to you as people do. They sit before you as my people. And they hear your words. But they do not do them. People listen. People contact me and ask about coming to services. It takes about 10 people to contact me asking me where services are before one person shows up. And I may be a little optimistic in that. I mean, I've had several people contact me in the last few weeks. And we've even arranged rides. And they don't show up. They're not that interested. They sit before you as my people. They hear your words, but they do not do them. For with their mouth they show much love, but their hearts pursue their own gain. They're busy with their own lives. Indeed, you are to them as a very lovely song of one who has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument. I think the presenters on the telecast are getting better and better. They're eliminating some things that they used to do that might bother some people, like starting every other sentence with the word now. I don't know if anybody ever noticed that. Am I the only one? Okay, somebody else, a few of you have noticed that they would start now and then go on another two sentences now, and that's being eliminated. And they're doing a much better job of really giving eye contact to us. Of course, they're just staring at a camera, but they see people through that camera, and they're doing a much better job. I think the presenters are just getting better and better and better. But has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument. For they hear your words, but they do not do them. We're getting a lot of people watching the telecast. And a number of people who write in for the Good News Magazine. But how many will do it? And he says, verse 33, and when this comes to pass, surely it will come. Then they will know that a prophet has been among them. A prophet has been among them. And I know that, yes, we look forward to the two witnesses to really fulfill this and to do it well. But we ourselves are a part of that. Let's turn to Matthew 24, verse 27 through 31. Some of these verses that I read right now may be read to you by Charleston Williams this morning or Bill Vernich this afternoon. They can read it again. Matthew 24, verse 27 through 31. Here is the Olivet prophecy of what is coming up at the end time. And in verse 27, and this is the part we all look forward to. Not necessarily are we as excited about the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth trumps, which are going to be some horrible things. Some terrible things are going to be during those trumpets. What is it, a fourth or a third of all mankind dies in the sixth trump? I forget right now. It's either a third or a fourth. Anybody remember right off? Third. All right. There you go. There are the guys who still have some memory, like Bill Vernich, young man. This is sad. The man has about 8 or 9 years on me, and his memory is much better than mine. Sad for me. Glad for him. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together. It really would have been better translated, though it might bother some people. There the vultures. Now, the expression we would say, that doesn't sound like a great expression, you know. Wherever Jesus is, the saints will be gathered. And so he's the dead body and we're the vultures. That's not an expression we would tend to use in this day and age. But that's what he meant. Wherever the carcass is, the dead body, there the vultures gather. So when you look up and you see the vultures circling and coming down, it's a clue that there's something dead there. And when Jesus comes, we will all gather to him. Verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. Then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Boy, that is really compressing an awful lot into just a few verses. Because when he talks about the heavenly signs, you're talking about the sixth seal. And then he immediately goes into the seventh trump. The Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. And they will gather together his elect from the four winds from one end of heaven to the other. Well, the first six trumps are going to be very unpleasant. But we look forward to the seventh trump. And we are, even now, preaching the gospel and having a trumpet to this world.